the actual experience of the market is the media narrative. Like, it's so catastrophic.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Hello and welcome back to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me, excited to have Pat Zingarella. Pat, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Pat is the CEO of Invest Clearly. Invest Clearly is a site dedicated to helping LPs find and evaluate syndication and fund sponsors and deals. Pat's also an active real estate investor with a portfolio of multifamily and commercial properties. So we'll dive into both of these, Pat. But I want to know right off the bat, just like, so you've got this site, Invest Clearly. And by the way, if you're listening and you're a general partner, you raise or you're looking to invest, check the site out. I love what you're trying to do here.
Thank you.
And because I think it's so important, so valuable. Why did you think of doing something like this?
Yeah, it was a multi-pronged, I would say, like, journey to getting to this. So my background to start, I've spent 6 years in corporate America working for a company that had a subsidiary that did this for the software space. And so CIOs, technology leaders would leverage this site to read reviews, evaluate technology before making this massive purchasing decision for their company. And I had an experience where I invested with someone I knew, like, and trusted someone, and it didn't go well. I later learned he did this to 60 other investors, and I was able to tell my inner circle to stay away. But later learned that, hey, there was a number of different bankruptcies that, was resulted from this. And if I had a large platform similar to what existed for the software world, I probably could have saved a lot of catastrophe. The second point in time, I was also, I before launching this business, I ran a sales consulting business. And one of our key clients was an accredited investor lead gen company. Their name is GenRev. And what they do is they provide digital marketing services for GPs for that, like, top of the funnel lead gen new capital opportunities. So I would spend my time working with a lot of sponsors. I talked to 5, 10 of the same asset class in a week, and very quickly realized that I had no idea what the difference between any of them were. At the same time, I was considering becoming an LP as well. I wanted to kind of shift more towards this passive, strategy. And I quickly realized that nothing existed where every single sponsor was all in one place, where every single deal was all in one place, where there were tools and resources outside of the sponsor as well as the paid media to help with your decision and evaluation. Yep. And so taking my experience from the software world and what I was desiring to achieve in real estate led to this business. At the same time, though, there was a lot of defaults happening in the market. And there was a lot of unfortunate things I was hearing with fraudulent activities. And I was talking to sponsors that have been around for years that can't put together a PowerPoint deck, but have overperformed the projections, over-communicated, but went virtually unheard of, due to the digital world. And so when I was interviewing LPs about this, I would ask people, hey, how do you find the GPs to invest in? And it was sort of the same answers. It was like, I'd find them in a forum. I would randomly meet them at a meetup. I would click on an ad. And then it was that whole phrase of no liking and trusting. But then when I would ask them who they knew, liked, and trust, I would be told someone with hundreds of thousands of followers on social media. And there wasn't a lot of, like, real definition of knowing and trusting. And so that's what led to the creation of this. Almost like the pain point that I was experiencing, plus the, I would say, industry transfer of what I'd done in the past created this.
Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, one of the things that I see, obviously, and I think it's pretty clear, is that there's a lot of GPs out there that have grown substantially, not necessarily because of their track record. Yeah. And it's exactly what you said, because of their social media presence, because of their, just their digital presence. And I'm thinking of a couple names that are really big, that have done extremely good job marketing online. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. I
Exactly.
think that's an excellent way to go about and build your brand. But as an LP, just because they have a big brand doesn't mean they're going to be a good company to invest in. So there's a big difference there. On the GP side, hey, you should do as much as you can to put yourself out there, to get yourself known, so people are willing to invest in your company, are ready and willing to invest in your company. They feel like they know, like, and trust you. I think that's really, really valuable and important. So kudos to those people who've blown it up. Think like a Grant Cardone. And I'm not saying Grant Cardone's not trusted. I don't know. I have never invested with him, and I probably never will. But he's blown himself up, right? He's made a huge name for himself through social media. But all these people that are investing with Grant, most of them don't even know who he is. But they just say, well, he's trusted. He's got a big name, so he's trusted. So I'm going to invest with him. Well, so have several other people been trusted that, are now in jail or whatever. Who's that pig? I can't think of the guy's name that ran that Ponzi scheme back in the GFC, that got busted. He was a financial guy. And I can't remember his name. But anyways, it happens. And just because you have a big name doesn't mean necessarily they're the person you want to invest with.
Yeah, and there it's funny. It's there's also the competing side. And so that's really why we built this, was not to be the reaper, but give someone a source of information outside of the influence of the media, as well as the people that are they're actually talking to potentially invest in. Like I spoke to a guy who he had just sold his electrical contracting company for like 10 million bucks, and he wanted to passively invest, and he got on the phone with a digital marketing leader and an industry leader on the social side of things, but actually stopped his process because his thought was like, everything sounds good, but am I only choosing to invest with this person because of their presence? And so that's almost like the other side of things is people aren't investing because they only think that they've been led to this individual because they were influenced. And so like there's another support system where it's like, yeah, you may have found them initially through an influence or a paid marketing campaign, but here is validation from other LPs that have invested with them that they are, good operators beyond the brand they've created. So it's kind of like that both side of things.
No, that's a good point too. Yeah, because if sometimes you don't like personally, like Grant Cardone, he's got a personality, right? A very strong personality, and that's going to attract a lot of people. But it's also going to make other people like, ugh, yuck. I don't want to be around this guy, so I would never invest with them. But then if you go to this, the website Invest Clearly, and you go, wow, I guess Cardone has an amazing business. Like, maybe I should dig into this. Or maybe you do the opposite and you go, man, I really love this guy. And you dig in and you go, man, I don't know about this guy. So either
That's the
way,
goal.
it's good because it gives a layer of transparency. The other thing I really like about it is that as an LP, it's hard to find GPs. I see it so often on, BiggerPockets, on social media, is like, how do I find trusted general partners? And other than the general partners raising their hand and go, pick me, pick me, pick me, it's like, well, where do you go? Like, how do you actually find these people? And so that can be difficult too.
And what we've built effectively exists in a number of different places, but it's very fragmented. Like in certain communities, this exists where people are sharing experiences, but the information and a list of sponsors is limited to the experience of the members. And so what we have done, and ultimately too, I think I said it earlier, but the journey of the LP to meet a GP currently is, I would almost say random, right? You need to hope the right person gets on the front page of Google. You need to hope the right person is running an ad that lands on your Facebook page. You need to hope you meet the right person at a meetup and then wait for a deal to happen. We're attempting to disrupt that process where the LP can start with the deal. these are my financial criterias, right? This is this is my qualitative criteria in terms of I only want to work with a GP that has 4 stars or better. It creates a short list of deals that matches your asset class, your financial metrics, your location, based interest. And then after you see the deal, you then see which sponsor is operating that deal, and you click on the sponsor from there. And so it's almost like you're flip-flopping the journey at this point in time to make it easier for people to find sponsors.
So clearly is setting up or helping, I guess, an LP navigate to their investment criteria. So I, because as an investor, I like longer term assets, cash flow heavy, fixed rate debt, all that kind of stuff. I could invest with a company that's going to buy a property, show really good returns, but they might be flipping that property, right? They're got bridge loan, they're flipping in 3 years. That's not a fit for me. But clear, if I go to, invest clearly, then I can actually hook up with the right sponsor. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the goal. So right now, again, one of the investment preferences and filters is the hold period for deals. And then we also have company average metrics as well. But it yes. So, and in this, in the GPs also will be, and I could go into this in a little bit, but we'll have influence on their bios and the summaries on deals. But then you have sort of this like qualitative experience of the LPs in the review. So yes, you kind of start with that monetary filtering, right? Your goals and things like that. And then again, the qual, like for an example, I spoke to an LP before we built this, and they invested with a sponsor. And the sponsor returns them a 30% return in 1 year. And so you're able to filter by IRR. However, the experience of that LP, they wouldn't invest with that individual again. Why is that? Well, because these guys were actually on the verge of failure, were bailed out by an appreciating market, and a cash buyer came in at the last minute. And so our goal is to match the two things, where this is the historical financials and potential future financials of the deal and sponsor, but here's actually the qualitative experience of the G. Did their K-1s come on time? Did they get the tax advantages they were promised? What was the communication like pre and post IR, things like that.
Yeah. Isn't that funny how that sponsor, that GP would have had a failure on their track
Yeah.
record, but the market lifted them up so quickly that they had all of a sudden a big success story. And now they're able to tout to everybody that they, had this property and sold it and had a 30% IRR to their
Yeah.
investors. Yet if you peel back the onion, it's not a success story
Yeah,
at
and
all.
that's when I was talking to LPs, that's the hardest thing right now about, I would say, like evaluating
Yeah,
opportunities is
everybody's been successful.
we were in this market where you literally couldn't lose.
Yeah.
So you really have no benchmark of, I don't want to say risk, but like your thought process is now, it went from, hey, everything is great and will make me money, to now the thought is like, nothing will make me money. I'm terrified. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what's hard for LPs right now.
Yeah. And that is hard. That's nap you're navigating a lot of difficult waters. I, by the way, Bernie Madoff was the guy I
Oh
was
yeah, but
thinking
okay,
of.
Bernie Madoff. Yeah. The most famous fraudster in the world.
Right. Everybody trusted him, and look at what he did. Right. And so, not that your website can completely 100% prevent it. So there's never any prevention of that 100%, but the goal is to at least drive awareness. And when things start to seem a little bit out of place, to start to expose those bad actors, and then also promote the good ones too. So,
Yeah, exactly. And the hard thing with the syndication world is every deal is an entity. So like every deal, and so it's very easy to shut down the entity, bury it, and move on to the next one.
True.
And so that's sort of, why this exists. And there's a fine line between, I don't want to say negligence, maybe like naivety plus negligence and fraud. And that fraud aspect really doesn't I don't think exist all that much. It does exist,
Sure.
but we also want to, we want to make sure the good operators are not being buried by the bad news as well. You know what I
Right.
mean?
Right.
That's super important.
What can you do for that? Like, is there anything you're doing or you see doing to not bury the good operators with the bad?
Yeah, I mean 100%. So that's again, that's where some of the filtering exists on the site where, hey, I only want to look at 4 and 5 star operators, 3, 4, 5 star operators. We are also in the process of on our homepage, it's algorithmically based where the operator with the most recent review who has an average rating of 4 stars or better is highlighted on our front page. We're actually rolling out like badges where it would be like, hey, this is the top multifamily operator. Most, I don't want to say most top reviewed or most reviewed multifamily operator in the Midwest, things like that. And again, the biggest thing to remember is we're not putting our stamp of approval on it. It's all, crowdsourced from the people with experience. But also the second sort of value prop is the value prop to the GP, right? Because it's difficult to create trust right now. Very difficult to create trust right now with new capital. And so for the GP, this is a way to create trust with new investors simply by leading with transparency, by collecting testimonials from your current investors. Because when and that's what's going to separate the good GPs from maybe, the not so great GPs is that the good GPs are going to go out and they're going to collect testimonials because they know as a tool, when they're talking to someone that isn't sure if they want to invest with them or not, they can point them to their testimonials and their reviews on Invest Clearly, because this is the only source where it's not influenced or impacted by the GP. And what I mean by that is every time an LP wants a reference call, the GP is going to put the best investor on the call with them, right? That's across every
100%.
industry in the world. Or every
100%.
testimonial that's on their website is cherry-picked. Well, on ours, an investor went through a multi-step process, provided proof that they invested with them to share their testimonial. That is a huge selling point for the GP that someone's willing to do that, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. How so as a GP, I guess. Who's paying for this? Like
Yeah, good
the
question.
LP, right? So somebody's paying for it.
Yep. So the GP, we're monetizing the GP, and I'll tell you how it works and how we remain objective and unbiased. But right now, we do not have a monetization feature on the site. So we're working through that right now. We're strictly focusing on building value and audience right now because based on my experience, we know if we could become the source for LPs to evaluate GPs, the GPs will pay. It makes sense. But what really allows us to build trust with the LPs is our business model. We are not selling LP leads, right? We don't sell LP data. We are not commissioned by dollars raised. We're not co-brokers. We're not registered with the SEC. So we're not broker dealers. And by staying out of the deals, it allows the LPs to trust us because they know that they're not seeing GPs because we've been financially compensated. So the way we're going to monetize this is we have three profile options for GPs. Number one, completely unclaimed profile. What that means is our goal is to have every single sponsor that's ever been registered with the SEC on our site, regardless if they want to participate with us. And even if they don't, their profile exists, it can still be reviewed. The second option is what's called a claimed profile, which allows, it's still of no cost. It allows the GP to log in. It grants them some editing capabilities where they can update their information that I may not have been able to find publicly. For example, what I've seen is a lot of lack of standardization around like assets under management versus unit count versus square footage. So it allows them to almost standardize how they're being represented. So the LP's search becomes more accurately and it allows them to represent themselves better. And then the second option is going to be profile upgrades for the GP. And really, what that's going to include, it never, they can't edit reviews, they can't impact reviews, and it doesn't allow them to show up higher in searches. It simply allows them to add more information to their profile to represent themselves better. What that looks like, we're still working through, but it's likely going to be a lot more media, calls to action, frequently asked questions, all things like that. Because what we've learned in the past is where LPs or any buyers fall out of the sales cycle is when friction is created for them to find information or connect with the person.
Yep.
And so the more information we have on their profile, the more calls to action, the more background, the more video, the more information on deals, the less likely they're going to have to go to an external source before booking a call with you. Or compare you to an alternative, the more likely they will to book a call directly with you. And from there, we'll be able to provide behavioral analytics to GPs. You know, how many people have hit your site? What are they clicking on the most? Where are they spending the most amount of time? We'll be able to support your almost like go-to-market strategy where, oh, hey, you have 20,000 LPs that have saved your profile potentially in this metro. You should do a campaign there. Or of the sponsors in your region, this is who LPs click on the most after you to help with your competitive analysis. Anything that really supports your go-to-market without actually selling you information on the LP.
Do you have, so what, you know, you just said you don't sell information on the LP, but do you have a way for them to connect within your within InvestClearly?
Yeah, good question. Not on our profile. And the reason why is that was one, so we've, you know, one of the biggest things we have to focus on is compliance with the FTC as well as the SEC. And so one of the biggest pieces of advice we received from the SEC, number one, obviously the favoritism aspect. We can't show favoritism, which is removing reviews, removing profiles, things like that. But also everything has to be led by the LP, meaning if the LP wants to reach out, they should. And that's our main goal here is you have a profile chock full of reviews, sharing good experiences. You have a profile that really represent yourself accurately. The inference is they're going to reach out to you.
So they're going to reach out to you, but they're not directly reaching out through your site. You'd have to go, hey, here's the sponsor site, click, boom.
Correct. So what we're working on as part of our call to action is maybe like a calendar integration to your IR team where they can book a call from your InvestClearly profile. Or again, we have backlinkings when they click on your website or things like that where we can show traffic and impact that we're making versus, oh, hey, here's a lead for $25. You know what I mean?
Right. Makes sense. Yeah. I mean, this is awesome. It again, just sifting out the bad, the good, and getting some clarity around, I think a really confusing market. It's not like you're looking at the stock market and you can read profiles of companies and understand what's going on and everything's publicly traded. And for some reason, I think we all feel warm and fuzzy about the publicly traded companies just because they're publicly traded, even though some of them those are scam artists too. but either way, there's just a lot less transparency in the LPGP world. And so I think this is amazing that you set this up. I love the idea behind it. I hope it really takes off.
Thank you.
Really well. Talk to me about, you know, like what's been, you own your own commercial real estate. You have this company now. What's a mistake that you've made? How have you learned from it?
Yeah, it's funny. It's and the mistakes that have become lessons have also led to like this company and everything else. The biggest thing that I do poorly and still do to this day is I do overtrust. I've said this on other podcasts, but
myself
like
if
you look at my DISC profile, like my personality profile, I am a lethally high I, which is like a social individual. I am a easy sell. I'm quick to believe. And like the analytical side of me, like barely exists. And so, and that's like indicative throughout. I mean, it's present in all of my real estate acquisitions. The first property I bought from somebody I met in my realtor licensing class. I barely knew how to read an inspection report. And 2 weeks after the property closed, the insurance company told me they weren't going to insure me unless I replaced the roof. And I had spent all my money on this thing. The first time I bought a commercial property, I bought it from a wholesaler, pretty much. It was the dude I was explaining earlier. And I had no idea the difference of how properties were evaluated, residential to commercial, which is a completely, I mean, that's a business versus an asset. Not an asset. It's like a business versus the market. And so that hammered me. I had no idea the difference between leases. You've got the grosses and the triple net. And I just like believed the person and jumped in. And, you know, what the way I've learned from that now is I have people that I partner with now that are my like no guy. Is I'm a salesperson to my core. I love outbound. I love digging up opportunities, but once it gets to the point of is this a yes or a no? I mean, my excitement leads towards yes every single time, so I have to put it in front of a person. It's funny. It's proof point in this site we're building. I mean, by the end of every day, I've got like 165 new features on our like project management board, and then our CTO and our chief product guy goes in there just, all right, let's just do three. So I was like,
Yeah,
okay. You know, and it's sort of like it's familiar for me now because like I hear one thing from a feedback. I was like, oh, that's a fantastic idea, but it's like one point of view. You know what I mean? And then I get fired up and it's gotta go on there. And yeah, I get taken back to reality quick.
Hey, that's good though. You're the visionary. You gotta have a visionary. Without the visionary, this wouldn't even be possible. So you're the
Yeah.
visionary, and you're excited about a lot of things, but you got an implementer that's like, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
We're only going to take one of these or two of these or three of these.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
let's step back a little bit. But what you said earlier is exactly why, you know. So a lot of, in my opinion, there's so many people that want to become real estate investors. I feel like everybody wants to be a real estate investor, you know, and they think the way to do it is to buy their own properties, and they go in blindly and they make the mistakes like buy the property that needs a roof replaced day one, right? But buy a property and not know the difference between a triple net and gross lease and that type of stuff because they trusted somebody. Where your personality, which is the same as a lot of people's personality, sounds like it's better to invest more passively, right? Or at least find a partner that you can truly trust, right? That's got a good track record, that's been there, done that, and partner with them. And that's where I think as I talk to people, I'm like, you know, you do what you want. Everybody can do what they want, but sometimes there's a different way. Like you don't have to buy that duplex. You don't have to buy that small commercial building. Like there's other ways to do this business. Not that that's the wrong way. It just might be the wrong way for you, right? So there's always a different way. Pat, what are some habits that you have created that have helped you kind of through, you know, growing your business?
So it there's the the directly impacted habits, which are the calls, the outreaches, to everything like that. But I've become super big on like health and fitness lately, and that then translates into productivity more than I ever knew possible. But for me, like I think the most critical thing is I am a process guy. I am, I have that visionary aspect to me where I get excited and things like that. But the development of a strategy, I'm less strong at than here is the strategy, go execute on it. And so, like from a habit standpoint, I need to have that, that CRM list, or I need to have that like CRM task. So I think the development of knowing what you're doing versus shooting from the hip to a certain degree. It's funny, like I would say I shoot from the hip at like a macro level, but at the micro level, that directional task list or follow-up campaign or something is what I need to use, to go from there. For example, like in GoBundance, they have the big on the habit tracker. And so you take your goals, but what are the actual intention behind the goals, or what are the habits? And I track there. I tried using a digital one where you share it with your friends. Didn't work for me. But just knowing that, the leading versus the lagging. I mentioned being the sales guy my whole life, and the indicators of I'm going to invest in a syndication, that lagging indicator. This is my end result, but the leading indicator is I'm going to reach out to 10 different sponsors. I'm going to read reviews on InvestClearly. Is how many of those are you doing per day? That's really what's important to me, is hyper focusing on those leading, because in a world right now, we're developing software. So like results and impact are not immediate. We've been doing this for almost a year from the point of ideation, and then you get to a certain point, and then like you realize there's a critical bug, or you find out there's a critical feature you should implement before going to market, or you can only go to market at one point. Like those habits are what's worth celebrating and what's worth, I guess just like recognizing that progress is happening is what's really important.
I've heard, speaking of the bug, I've heard people that develop, software, and I've heard that you should both ways. You should wait until everything is as perfect as you can, because you only get one chance. And the other I've heard is get it good enough, get it out there, and then get the next version out there after, So what's your thought on that? I've heard both.
So it's funny. It's like we're doing this for the first time. This is the first time we built it. This isn't the first time we've sold something like this. It's not the first time, we're in this industry. But I think the fear keeps you in step one, like option one, but it's never perfect. It is never, ever, ever perfect. And so the point of like a minimum viable product, like what can you get out there and get market validation? Option two, right? And that's what we've done. And so it took us a while to get to that point, but I was actually challenged by someone in my GoPod who was like, hey, you keep talking about this like benchmark before you're going to go collect reviews, go collect reviews. Like the next day, I had five friends writing on it. And so I was like, okay, and then this is the step one of the next two. And then you built the next feature set or the next, I don't know, product rollout. And then that leads to, okay, now we're good enough to get sponsors involved. And then it's like, hey, maybe now we're built out enough to go raise money versus let's just wait and delay everything, get no users on it, and just see if we could, wait until it's perfect and then what happens when it's not.
And I guess really what happens when you put it out to market and you thought it was perfect, but the market says, hey, this isn't what we want. We need these other features as well.
And it's pretty cool. It's like there's so many things that happen that you're so involved in it that you may not think of, even like the tiniest little bugs. I was like, what was I thinking? Like, for example, for us, one of our like notification preferences, we didn't have states on there. Like you can filter by state, but if like a deal gets published within a certain state, there was no notification to the LP going out on that. It's like, why didn't we think of that? That's like such a critical
Interesting.
thing right now where people want to be in, like I would say mostly red states. People want to be in maybe like the Sun Belt area, but like we don't have that built. And once someone said that to us, like that was probably the most elementary like feature we should have built, but it did built that didn't come to us.
Yep, that makes sense. Yeah, I hear it a lot. People want to be in a certain state. I invest in the Midwest mostly, and so I hear from a lot of people that are investing in Texas and Florida and other markets like that. And they're like, I invest in all these Sun Belt markets. I just kind of want something in the Midwest. And so they reach out to me just because I'm in the Midwest, right? So, and I obviously there's a lot more people that would rather invest in the South and like you said, the red states, the Sun Belt states, but I can see how people want to sort by state. What's something that LPs, what's like maybe the number one thing that LPs are talking about right now to you? Concerns or wants, needs, whatever it might be, whether it's with your website or whether it's just overall, like what are you hearing?
So, there was two things we built based on like the immediate feedback of LPs. Number one is like our validation step, right? Is like how do you validate that the LP is a real review? How do you know it's not just someone, maybe a sponsor having their family member write reviews? Or, and the second one is like the fear of sharing publicly. And so we built two features. One, they have to upload proof that they participated in the deal. And that's like any sort of documentation. People are sending me screenshots of their investor portal. I'm getting a lot of like statements from their investor portal. And the other one is like the ability to post anonymously. And so the anonymous posting does not change on the back end. They still have to upload proof. I match up the name, but their display name is public. But again, the reason for both of those is this trust factor. And I think it's very difficult right now for LPs to understand who to trust. And it's not just like what's rough. I think what's rougher on everything than the actual experience of the market is the media narrative. Like, it's so catastrophic and it's so predictive. And could it happen this way? Possibly. Could it not happen this way? Possibly. But no one's actually like evaluating their own situation anymore. Everyone's evaluating what like these mega media outlets are telling them that's going to happen to them. You know, and that's what's tough is people have money right now. Like, people have capital. They want to place it, but they're struggling to like, I think they're struggling with all of the information they're getting versus the actual like situation they're in. Does that make sense?
Yo, yeah, 100%. We did a capital raise in May, I think. Well, we closed in May of 2023. And it was amazing, the difference in the investor attitude at that point in time. You know, it just, they're nervous because of all the headlines. That's when interest rates were starting to skyrocket or already had, but they were just going up and up and up. And that's when the bank crisis, you know, started, several banks shut down, right?
Yeah.
So people are like freaked out. And so I would ask investors, hey, why are you not investing in this deal? And I got two common answers is, one, I'm just holding on to my money right now because I'm really nervous about what's going to happen. And number two is, I'm holding on to my money because I'm really excited about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's because they're looking at the major headlines in the news. They're not thinking about, okay, look, this investment hits all my investment criteria. Like, it had these headlines not been out there, would I have invested in this deal? Yes. Okay, it checks all the boxes.
Yeah.
Yep, it everything I want right here. Okay. Well, it is maybe everything I want, but not anymore because the news headlines have made me fearful or excited, whatever it is. And quite frankly, like, so far, look what's happened. Like, really nothing.
Yeah.
Not to say it can't, right? It still could. But so far, really nothing has happened. And, you know, I don't want to say that was the best deal ever and they should have invested in it. But, you know, if you liked those metrics, like, that's a deal you missed out on because you were listening to the big headlines, right?
Yeah. And it's funny. It's like, I remember it was like the Real Deal versus Rise 48. I don't know if you saw that happening, but they were going back and forth. Like, one statement was made, there was a defense, and then it went on the offense. And then but like as a potential investor, there was a point where like, I just don't know like who to believe at this
Which
point.
Which am I going to trust?
Yeah. Like, right. I don't actually know. And it was just kind of a crazy thing to watch while we were building this. Cause I was like, you know, this makes sense.
Yep. Yep. And you go on, you hear something like that from the Real Deal, and then you go on to Invest Clearly and you can look at that sponsor.
Yeah.
And you can say, okay, the Real Deal is accurate. It's real. Or the Real Deal is not accurate. And it looks like everybody loves this company.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of sifts through some of that noise, right? Of, well, wait a second. Yeah, this is just a smear piece. Or, hey, there's something here. Like, I don't want to invest with these guys. So, you know, either way, it gives you some clarity there. So, okay, Pat, I got a couple last questions I want to wrap up. So,
sure.
What's a favorite book you can recommend to our listeners?
Favorite book? I'll split it between business and then personal. I'm a big fan of mindset. I love the Success Principles. Right now I'm reading Can't Hurt Me, David Goggins. You know, I feel like I should have read that a long time ago. And then from a business standpoint, I'm a huge fan of Cashflow Quadrant, just from a concept standpoint. I mean, it's more about tax, you know, your tax selection than anything, but I think just the idea of where you want to land in those four quadrants is huge.
Yep. I read that book a long time ago.
Yeah.
Actually, I was supposed to be a student, substitute teaching. I used to be a teacher. I was substitute teaching, and when you're a substitute teacher, half the time the teacher just has you play a movie.
Yeah.
And so when I remember I was sitting there, I read that book in 1 week during this class or during these classes, because I would push the movie, push play, and then I'd start reading the book while the movie's playing. And so I got through that whole book. Fun memories down memory
Yeah.
lane we go.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So, all right, so last question, what are your three pillars of wealth creation?
Yeah, I mean, family over everything. That's one of my biggest pillar, wealth creation. I was just on a podcast talking about the balancing of family and business, and nothing else truly matters if you don't prioritize that, in my opinion. The second is health and fitness, which could really be separated into two. I was in a position where I was extremely unhealthy, and that impacts all areas of your life. And so I've been getting my labs done every 6 months, and I've been really focusing on what you're consuming and how often you're working out. And then the last one is mindset. I'm a big mindset guy. I think in something that in any area of your life, if it's you'll lose a psychological battle before you'll lose the strategic and execution battle 10 out of 10 times. So I think if you can master your mindset in terms of adversity, in times of I would say uncertainty, you're gonna make it. As simple as that.
Yeah, 100%. Is it books mainly that with your mindset, or is there any other hacks that you like to do?
Yeah, it is. It's books. I paid for coaching for a very, very long time. I was actually a sales rep for a mindset coaching company, and I actually learned, I think, more from the sales calls than I've ever, it was almost like I was supposed to be there impacting other people, and I was getting impact just as strongly. And it reframes
That's
kind of
awesome.
everything I thought about, financial freedom. And I'll give you, if you have a quick sec, I'll give you an example. I used to ask the same questions on every call, like, what are your goals by the end of the year? What's possible? What's something that would be impossible, would be awesome if you did it? And I talked to this guy that had like 1,200 doors, wasn't a fund, wasn't a syndicate, personally owned 1,200 doors. And I asked him, hey, what's your goal by the end of the year? And he told me he wanted to add 200 doors to his portfolio. Then when I asked him what would be impossible but would awesome if he achieved it, he told me to turn his phone off for 2 weeks. So it was like you had this guy who virtually achieved everything everyone wants from a financial standpoint, but doesn't have the actual freedom to spend 2 weeks with his family uninterrupted. So that sort of made me like question everything that I thought about financial independence and freedom. It's like, oh man, okay.
Yeah, it sounds like that guy didn't need to necessarily buy those 200 units. He needed to focus on asset and property management and implementing the right people in place so he could actually turn his phone off for 2 weeks. I can't remember. There's a book I read a long time ago, and the author talked about taking a 1 month vacation every year and not doing any work during that vacation. And the importance of that exercise wasn't necessarily the vacation, although that was important. It wasn't necessarily the not working during that vacation, although again, that's important. It was that you set your business up to where it can run without you for a period of time, for an extended period of time, not just for a day or two. Right. And so that was the importance of that exercise. And I think that's really good. And I quite frankly, I did that, and I had it to where, we went on a 3 week vacation to Europe, and I did have my phone on a little bit. But it was pretty successful. I mean, I've had it at times where it could run without me, but there's other times where it's like, man, I'm not set up for that. So I think that's something you probably should just continually make sure you could do, whether you take the 1 month vacation or not, but making sure that you could take that 1 month vacation, I think is super important, and probably even taking the 1 month vacation. Well, cool. Pat, what any other last pieces of parting advice you want to give to our listeners?
Don't think so. I mean, one of the biggest things I always lean on is that peace of mindset in anything is the mindset, and I'm still a believer in the syndication space. I wouldn't have created this site if I didn't. I think it's there's a lot of smart people in here, and pivots probably will have to be made, but I still think supplementing your knowledge and experience with an investor that has a ton of that is still a good move. It's just getting beyond that no liking and trusting and verifying from a third party source is the step that everyone should take.
By the way, could an
That's
LP, without being prompted by the GP, an LP could write reviews
Oh yeah,
on sponsors?
most of the ones we have on there are from, well, we're still young, right? We're still young in our journey, but most of the reviews we have on there were from LPs that found the site or within my network went on there and wrote reviews. And once we hit that like mass adoption, that's what we expect to happen.
Yeah, because that is even more value. Obviously, if
Yeah.
I reach out to my select investors and I say, hey, go on there, write a review, every GP is going to do that. But
Yeah.
once you have continual LPs just going there and going, hey, this was a bad experience. This is why. This was a good experience. This is why. That's where the real power of this
Yeah.
website really starts to take shape, right?
100%. We're not there yet, but that's the intent. Yeah.
Cool. Pat, man, really appreciate it. How can our listeners get in touch with you? Obviously the website, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The website is goinvestclearly.com. My email address is pat@goinvestclearly.com, and then I'm on every social media. It's either I should create a little more continuity with my name. My full name is Pasquale, so it's Pasquale Zingarella on some things. But yeah, I'm available.
Cool. Awesome. Well, really appreciate it. You have a fantastic rest of the day.
Thank you, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. I appreciate you being a loyal listener. Say, I would love to have you go on to our Facebook page and subscribe, give us a thumbs up, go on to iTunes or wherever you listen and give us a rating and review. Don't forget to subscribe. It's a rating and review just helps us push this out to more and more people and continue to grow our audience and hopefully positively affect a ton of people out there that really need this and want this. So the other thing I've got for you is a free ebook on my website. So go on to venturedproperties.com, venturedproperties.com, and download our free ebook on real estate and on syndication. And I've got some data points in there, some really good stuff for you. So I'd love to have you take a look at that. It's free. I'm not expecting anything from it. And also, look, if you want some help in multifamily, want some help learning, growing, getting your business off the ground, I would love to talk to you about what it would look like to work with me potentially and see if that's a good fit. So you can go to coachwithdex.com and check that out, and we can definitely have a call. Thanks a lot for listening. You make it a fantastic rest of the day. I'll catch you on the next episode.